Assalamualaikum and a very good evening to all of you. You are watching Lebaran Awani with me, Hafiz Marzuki.
And me, Fei Kwan. We are at B1 BSC on the second day of Hari Raya, Hafiz.
Selamat Hari Raya. Yes, Selamat Hari Raya to you too. Selamat Hari Raya, maaf Zahir Batin, to all our viewers. As you know, Hari Raya Aidilfitri is a, you know, it's an annual celebration where we open our hearts, you know, just in line with our theme, Bukalah Hati, which is we open our hearts, you know, reflect on ourselves over the past year and also, you know, meet friends. And how has Raya been for you, Faye, this past?
Well, it's been a bit quiet, but I've got some open houses scheduled up. I'm excited to meet my friends, but I'm even more excited for the food and all the Kuih Raya.
Always. We're always excited about food. And as always, this is the third day of our Lebaran Awani program. If you've been tuning in to us, we've been broadcasting ever since Raya Eve. And as usual, you know, for tonight, we have arranged a lineup of great guests where we can talk about all things Raya. And with us tonight, on second day of Raya, is Nur Aidi Hazikah Syafi'i. For those who know her, you know, she wears a lot of different hats. She's the Muda Gender and Family Bureau Chairperson, am I right? Also a lawyer, and also I think recently started a fashion brand. Is that right?
I just started.
Okay, this is okay. We'll delve about it in a bit more. Yeah. But Selamat Hari Raya to you, Aini.
Thank you very much. Selamat Hari Raya to you both.
Yes, thanks for. Okay, first things first, because we're discussing all things Raya, right? How has Raya been for you this past prepping? Because you know, before this it has always been like COVID and everything for the past few years. Actually, how has Raya been this year for you and your family?
Okay. So, thank you very much. First of all, I feel like this is like the real Raya Raya. Because
back to usual.
Because I feel like, you know, all these years, it was all about like COVID, all the restrictions where you can't travel, etc. So, I think this year was really, really big for us, the whole family, because we're planning like the whole chuti and everything else. All this, like, you know, going back to real where, you know, all Malays, when it comes to Raya, it's all about visiting families, not just like in your kampung, but
across the states.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because previous years we don't. It's been a while, right?
I mean, like, you didn't realize it's been 3 years, but
time
yes,
flies.
It is. And I already have like my 2 children with me, so I feel like wow, this is quite long, you know. Now that you know we're traveling with like 2 toddlers, so
I can't empathize.
When it comes to balik kampung, where is kampung for you actually?
So my parents, both my family-in-law and also my parents are here in KL.
Team Raya KL.
But we have families in Johor. Mm. So usually we will go back to Johor, Muar. Alright, Team Muar. Okay. And then after that, we'll travel to JB. So orang Johor, they call it like if you go back to Muar, it's going back to Muar. You don't call it Johor. But if you go back to like JB, you'll say that, oh, balik Johor.
Muar is a separate.
Yes.
Special.
We talk about different families and going back to Johor and stuff. What are the Raya traditions? Because I'm sure all of us, we have our own familial traditions, right? What are the usual Raya traditions for you?
I think for most of us, right, the best Raya tradition is always like the Eve of Raya, right, where we gather. I remember when I was very small, growing up, it was always with my grandmother's, my mom's grandparents, where we go back to our kampung in Klang Je, tapi it's such a big feast. Where all of us would celebrate together, cook together, you know, there's no term as like catering or whatever at that point of time. So everything is just like doing it together. So it's been like an annual thing every year. So I think that's the one thing that all of us missed when COVID happens. You couldn't go back. That's the best tradition. Where that's the only time.
You couldn't congregate, right?
Exactly.
In like 5-6 families together.
More. Like my mother, she has like 10. So imagine like whole 10 of us, whole 10 of her siblings in one house.
But I'm just wondering about like Raya food. Do you have like a favorite dish or a signature dish that you only serve during Raya or something like that?
I think each family would have different.
Yeah.
But my favorite will always be ketupat palas and rendang daging. So I think that's my ultimate favorite lah. So pergi mana-mana, I will go cari that lah.
Yeah.
But of course, in every of our household, every household usually, they would have different kind of food lah. But of course, ketupat, all this must be on the table.
Of course.
And how about you cooking for yourself? Do you have a Raya specialty that you serve to guests?
So that what COVID has turned me into. Okay, the best part. Okay. That over the past 3 years, I've been learning from my mom online because we couldn't travel, etc.
Oh, where's your mom based, by the way?
So my mom is based in Selangor as well. Okay. But I remember those years, I think 2020, 21, where we couldn't even travel at all. And we didn't have to stay at home, 10 kilometers or something. So I had to cook on my own. So okay. I think that was like the biggest challenge, but I nailed it lah. Everybody's still alive.
Yeah. I've been seeing your Insta stories, it's getting more elaborate. But
a lot of food.
Do you have like a favorite kuih, like biskut raya that must have? Like every time, like every year, you know, COVID, tak COVID, mesti beli juga.
I think, you know how like there's always like the modern kuih raya and like some very traditional kuih raya. I think for me, if it's like the modern one, I would love the conflict kuih.
Gotta have those.
That one. And if it's tradi-
she likes it too.
She like, she I've was been asking, searching for it.
Yeah, she's been searching for it.
Okay.
Like, during Ramadan and, you know, she's
been searching.
Boleh cari
dekat TikTok banyak.
Oh, TikTok, okay.
And then the traditional one would be like tart nenas. I love it so much. And it usually have like a different kind of taste if it's like properly using like the right recipe. Mm. So you gotta buy the right one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's been I guess it's been great lah. This year has been great.
I'm always looking forward for this year because 3 years has been like so long.
Yeah, 3 years has been long. But you know, I want to delve a bit into the fashion brand that you started. In fact, I believe you're wearing one today.
Yes.
Okay, maybe tell us a bit about your fashion brand, Athena, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. So the name is Athena. Athena is actually a combination of my two children, Fatih and Alina. Mm. And the one I'm wearing today is called a design called Alina. Mm. So how I started actually was because I've been a lawyer the longest of my life, all right? But I thought that, and I've always loved dressing up. So, you know, people always associate lawyers like wearing black and white all the time. Mm. But I wanted to like, you know, really not just move into a different sector of it, but also because I love dressing up. So I feel like, you know, and people always ask me, hey, what tudung are you wearing? Baju apa? Kasut apa? Every time, a lot of my friends know that. So I thought that I would want to share like what I really love to wear, something that's comfortable, that's something that I can wear all day long, for example. Like this one is actually a pantsuit. Mm. So something that I really want to share with people. So that's when I start. And I think the journey has been very challenging, but very fun.
How long has it been?
So I started early this year, which is in January. So it's just been a few months.
First trimester.
Yeah, the first
trimester. Yes. about going into 4 months.
Yes. Yeah.
Let me delve a little bit into that comfort part. When it comes to your Raya collection this year, how do you balance between something fashionable but also something that's comfortable? Because as we know, Masa Raya, you want to get good pictures, but you also want to eat and you want to be comfortable.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I think a lot of people would know that being comfortable during Hari Raya is the most important thing. Mm. So that's how I balance or strike between that two, you know, being fashionable and at the same time being comfortable. Mm-hmm. Because especially as a mother of two, I know like, you know, you need to catch up to all your children running, one, but also at the same time...
you need to be nimble.
Exactly. But at the same time, you also want to make sure that you look decent and then fashionable on that particular day or actually the whole month. So I thought that striking that balance is very important because I want to make sure that the brand carries something that's comfortable for everyone.
Yeah. Mm.
So that's how I try to manage the design and especially putting myself into all these mothers' shoes, especially our women's shoes, where wearing it would make you feel happy, fun, but at the same time, not running away. I mean, like, not running away from any traditional design. Mm. So there's still that element, combining the element. Yeah, infusing between these two.
I mean, when you talk about designing, I mean, within the infrastructure of Athena, you have like a fashion designer within your setup or whichever.
Or are you the
are you designing it solely?
I don't know whether it's unfortunately or not, but yes, I am.
Wow.
Okay, well, I do not design from scratch, lah, but I already know.
You give the inspiration.
You have an inspiration, yes.
So technically. So, well, that's interesting. I've seen a bit of your Raya collection. Are you delving into menswear soon?
I Well, of course, there's a lot of ideas that's coming in, but I'm going step by step on it and see.
Hafiz is listening.
He's going to be my first customer.
Yeah, because when I looked at it, I was like, wow, Aini's now into doing fashion, right, upon other things, right? So that's why I find it interesting because it requires some sort of courage, right, to start into something. You know, when we talk about, because it's like bukalah hati in a way, but you know, you're opening yourself to like new experience. Like, tell us a bit about like how, what made you make the jump into this field?
It's not really like a jump. I'm still practicing as a lawyer, managing my own firm, small firm. But still, I feel like, one thing I feel like this, I wanted to provide, because I've been working with the community, etc. You see, a lot of people see like all the baju raya are like very T20, very so expensive. People have been complaining every other year. But I feel like I want to provide something that is up to that standard, but with a decent price. So I feel like this is what I can come out with. Mm-hmm. And from the feedbacks that I get, it's more or less very affordable and pretty much, you know, go into that kind of like standard and level. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, hats off to you for multitasking. First of all, being a mother of two, a lawyer, a fashion designer. You mentioned there were some challenges when it came to starting the brand. Can you tell us about that?
Definitely, it's because I do not come from any retail. I'm not a retail expert, or I'm not a fashion designer. I have never been. I've never been in that sector or industry.
Yeah.
It's just a try, actually, to be very honest. Really, because I love dressing up, and I feel like I could understand a lot of like women and mothers, especially balancing between like, you know, being wanting to be good in Instagram, for example, but at the same time trying to like make sure that your children are like safe with you. So that's how I always try to picture myself wearing it.
Yeah,
but it's just one of like the challenges.
I mean, there's a lot of things to chew on there. We'll take a short break here on Lebaran Awani, and we'll continue our conversation with Nuraini Hazika Shafi in just a while. Stay tuned.
Hai, saya Jum Kari. Saya ingin mengucapkan kepada anda semua Selamat Hari Raya Aidilfitri. Jangan betulkan TV anda kerana ini adalah berita yang dikuasakan oleh kecerdasan buatan. Pandu berhati-hati, pastikan anda selamat di Aidilfitri.
Welcome back to Lebaran Awani with me, Hafiz Marzuki.
And me, Fei Kwan.
And in this auspicious second day of Raya, is it day? It's already like night of Raya. We are speaking to Nuraini Hazika Shafi. As you know, she's here in our set at day one at BSC, where we discuss about all things Raya. Faye, take it away.
Well, she is a fashion designer. That's what we touched on prior to the break. But Aini, I do have a question where beyond Raya or beyond weddings, you know, do you have any tips that you can share to our viewers on how they can recycle or reuse their baju Raya outside of these festive events?
I think that is also what Athena is all about. Uh-huh. We do not want to just, you know, go deep into like just the festive of Hari Raya. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that, you know, the product or the items that we produce is something that is wearable the whole year. Mm-hmm. So I feel that's also important because that's the kind of work that I've been advocating. Mm. You know, it's not just wearing it during Hari Raya, but also at other events.
Yeah.
Not just also for weddings, but also any kind of like events.
Mm.
Yeah.
Talking about good cause and everything, and I think for those who know you a bit better, I mean, you're an advocate for a lot of stuff. What's been on the agenda of sorts in the year 2023? Where's your mind at? Because I mean, of course, we've said about all this that you're doing, but also you also have Happy Bang, which is also what you do. What's on the agenda this year?
I think most importantly this year, I talked a lot, or actually advocating more on women in and The sector of economy, making sure that, you know, this year is all about like upgrading women's standards, for example, chances for women in the economy sector. And that's very, very important because we have been left out for the past 3 years. Mm-hmm. And actually, this is actually the time for women to sort of like not just kickstart, but also restart back. You know, we talked previously, on the budget for 2023, for example, on how the government should start giving a lot more opportunities for women, especially in the industry that can uplift them.
Yeah.
You know, when we talk about that, of course, it's the economy. Mm. That's the only thing that can push women to also contribute to the economy of the country. And that's the most important thing. And apart, of course, for some work that I do on the ground, especially with like single mothers, women at large.
Mm-hmm. What role then do you think men and boys, beyond the government, what role can our men and boys do to help empower women at this time, especially after being left out for 3 years? It's about time we are taken seriously again.
So a lot of people think that, you know, when we talk about like women's roles, women's achievements and whatnot, it's only about women. Mm-hmm. And I think that perception has to change because the reality is women as a community can't be doing it alone. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's how I practice it at home as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I talk to my husband, for example, talk to my son that, you know, shared responsibility when we talk about this. It's about like men and women doing it together. You know, you can't be uplifting a community, a women community, just with women in it. You know, you need men to push it as well.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's very, very important to also advocate for men who are in the management, top management levels, for example, to push for such policies, law, or actually, decisions that can uplift women. You know, this is the only way. If you get men involved in such decision making to uplift women, then it could be better. You know, not just women talking about those issues.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about women in economy, for example, women in the industry, for example. So it's very important to get men involved in it. You know, rather than, you know, chanting, it's only women chanting for it.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think when you've gone into a very interesting topic, which is about traditional gender roles, right? Mm. Of course, things like this, there is, a generational difference of how we think. I understand what you mean about, you know, shared responsibility, you know, cannot let my wife do every single chore, you know, you have to, I mean, it's a house that you manage together, etc., etc. But how do we inculcate that in the future? Because right now, society is built from what's in the past. Certain men and women are brought up in a certain way where they believe that is their role.
Yeah.
I mean, their role is, women's role traditionally is told to be at home. But how do we break that? I mean, in your work, how do you do that?
I think breaking the chain means doing it first by yourself. You know, you have to start it. You know, you have to break the chain somewhere. Mm-hmm. You can't be like advocating or preaching about it, but not practicing it. You know, so it's very, very important that start it at home. That's when I first start or shared just now that, you know, it's first that your husband and your children, for example, must understand what is shared responsibility before you start talking outside. That's what I try to do. Of course, there's, of course, challenges. You know, especially when we talk about like how this is actually a generational issue where probably our parents would think differently.
Mm.
All those serving a food at home or this Hari Raya, for example, should be women.
Mm.
But if we change or like we try to think that to break the change is about like us doing it, then I think our children, our next generation, would have a different mindset that it's not just a girl's chore, for example.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that's also very important to inculcate the idea that it's not about doing it, a woman or a girl's doing it, but also it's a wholesome responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's all about starting at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. And besides including women as well, we talked a little bit about your activism. Has Happy Bank or the Human AIDS Selangor Society done anything to perhaps include more of the marginalised communities, whether it's refugees, low-income families, to include them in Hari Raya festivities this year? Have there been any
initiatives? One of the things that we have been practicing, number one, is actually MUDA itself. We do not name our bureau as like Women's Bureau.
Mm.
It's clearly a gender and family bureau so that we can focus.
That's intentional.
Yeah, all right. Okay. Secondly is that, you know, over the past many, many years, you know, going down on the ground, working with like people on the ground, I saw how it is so traditional or conservatively a lot of like the ketua-ketua community, the community leaders come from men. Mm. But we start to break that change, and especially for Happy Bank and Human Aid, we start getting women to be part of like the decision making or to be the community leaders.
JKKK.
Yeah, one that, and also like how women can be involved in making sure that their community is well taken care of. Mm-hmm. So we start talking to a lot of like women who can actually. So a lot of like these women when we started actually come to us and say that, oh, I cannot because like I'm a woman. Mm-hmm. Can you contact this person? From day one, which is like when COVID happens, I told them, this is your community. Everybody is responsible. That's actually a point, a very important point to tell this woman that you have a responsibility and that leadership also is in you. Mm-hmm. It's just that, you know, let's bring it out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that. So that's one of the ways where we try to make sure that, you know, women can be involved in such decision making, especially for their own community. That's how also we try to make sure that these women can be part of leadership management.
Just to get a little bit granular on that, I understand this hyper-local approach, but the community, is it very urban-centric, semi-urban, or, you know, or it's like sporadic, like everywhere there's...
Quite sporadic. It's just that if you go to urban families or urban poor families, you know, especially in PPR, for example, you do not have such a problem as bad as going to kampung-kampung. Mm. So as kampung-kampung, it's very mindset, it's already set in them that... the leader should be men, you know.
Segan satu.
But albeit actually, you see those working on the ground is women. Yeah. You see, you talk about political party, you talk about like community, gender, whatever. It's always women, but it's quite a change that you need to make sure that, you know, women are in the leadership set rather than you know making sure that they're just on the ground doing. Passing barang bantuan or something.
All about breaking the glass ceiling for women and normalizing women in leadership roles, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. What I mean, also, I know you're in charge with Gender Bureau in Muda. What's the main thing that you want to advocate for from within Muda?
So I feel like, of course, we have seen how important it is to advocate gender equality as a whole. But of course, in Malaysia and also actually in a lot of countries, the most discriminated, of course, are women. So, and that is why we advocate for a lot of like women's rights, actually gender rights as well. We're not talking about like, you know, LGBT, etc. But also it's very, very important to give women that platform. Mm-hmm. The thing is that women has not seen what kind of platform they can have. No, unless you show to them that this is the platform that you can try. You know, that's how we actually try to manage those in Muda. And I think a lot of like young girls or young women are interested in that idea. Because, you know, all this while they do not have such platform or space to voice out, to do some certain things.
Yeah, that's very optimistic, Faye. And I think, thank you so much, Aini, for sharing your second night of Raya with us. We really appreciate your time. However, we're moving from women empowerment to something that's a bit more different. More specifically, it's about chef in Penang. His name is Chef Nuril. Let's hear what he has to say.
For festive Malaysian feasts, I think for Raya, one festivities, I think a lot of people is really used to the lemang, ketupat, rendang. So for me, in my opinion, dekat Penang ni, sometimes we do laksa. So I think one suggestion will be a fresh, something fresh and something different for your guests if you're planning to do Hari Raya open house or some small function. You could consider something a bit more healthy. So I do believe laksa kan, it's less oil, it's a seafood based, fish based. Sayur-sayur dia pun a lot of vegetables and a rice noodle. And I think that will be a good healthy option. And laksa is also very regional. So different parts of Malaysia, you got different type of laksa, laksam, laksa siam, laksa lemak, laksa asam. So you can also be proud of your regional punya laksa to do something healthy and something different. And I also think because Raya is sometimes we forget about our healthiness, and it's always meat and oily food. So laksa is one option. You can also try to do some festival style kerabu, kerabu yang menarik-menarik. You boleh tambah maybe some grilled meat or grilled seafood or some sayur-sayur yang rare macam rebung, nangka yang bagi orang or your tetamu a bit more excited when they come and visit your house. So why I decided to specialize in Peranakan cuisine per se is because it's something close to my heart. It's something I grew up with. We learn eating this food, and when we enjoy eating this food, we naturally will spark an interest to want to know how this food is made. So from a quite large culinary background, I was working in a Japanese restaurant, French, European, but somehow Peranakan and local Melayu Tanjung food is something that is very close to me, and I feel it's very important for young chefs also to understand their local cuisine. So in the beginning of my career, I was doing more international cuisine, but later on I realized I think local food has more potential because it's what we are catering to, you know, all our Malaysian citizens. Even you see in Penang, the Chinese and the Indians also, they're eating nasi kanda, curry, sama belacan. So it definitely has an appeal to people. And how we incorporate kind of like modern techniques into traditional things is not so, doesn't kind of like fight each other too much. We try to keep things still traditional. As you can see, some of the menu is not very much fusion ke apa-apa, but we just do things, what we say, we try to practice the best methods, the best practice to do things. We've done quite a few memorable dishes. We try to focus on traditional things, but there has been a few times where we have to do something a bit more modern, but with the element of very traditional flavors. So one dish that we did in particular, I've done quite some time ago, was our otak-otak with ulam pesto. So our otak-otak is prawn-based. We steam it with the fish. It's served with a pesto, but made from ulam-ulam traditional. And it's also served with kerabu with pucuk paku. So that it's more like a modern Peranakan dish, which we use, which I use actually to compete with in the Rage Star competition. And then Alhamdulillah, with that dish, we managed to win the competition. So it does reflect in how this dish per se, the otak-otak, the ulam pesto, the kerabu pucuk paku, it appeals to local palate lah. So local people, the judges, and also your clients, they want to taste something familiar, something traditional, but at the same time it looks a bit more modernized. So that's what we try to do. And along the road, we do try to modernize a few traditional dishes, but like what I said before, we don't want to take away too much of the traditional element because we cater to a large group of people. Ada yang turis, youngsters, students, and also local Penang, makcik-makcik and auntie-auntie yang mai, and they are agak critical lah. You know, so when we try to do things a bit too modern, you have these people say, hey, lagu ni tak betul, tak boleh masak lagu ni, kena buat macam ni, macam ni, macam tu. So we don't want to offend people lah. This is tradition kan. Oh, okay, this is actually, I'm glad you asked this, because it's actually one of the things that we do actively try to reduce the impact to the environment. So any restaurant, you cannot lie lah, you tak boleh tipu. Restaurant ni is going, or hotels, or any sort of business is going to contribute to pollution, to pencemaran alam sekitar. So what we do here in Jawi House, we try to, first, we separate a lot of our organic waste. Our vegetables, fruit waste, kulit telur, a few things which is organic, we put it in separate tong. We put it in a separate barrels, apart from our normal waste. And barrels ni, of all this organic waste, kita bawa balik rumah I, and we do composting. So we take this organic waste, we compost it with all the garden punya barang, all the leaves and daun and all this. When we make the compost, we use this compost to grow some of the ulam and other herbs that we're going to use in this dish. So you can see, like, you have here bunga telang, lima perut, daun pudina. A lot of this is grown in our garden, and not to say everything in the garden we use, but a lot of things in the garden is rejuvenated by the compost that what we produce. So we can try, we've been doing this composting for I think 4 or 5 years already, and you can see that one tong, one barrel of food waste is very heavy, at least 50 to 60 kilos. So over the few years, you can see how much tons of food waste that we have converted to make into compost or earth or soil itself, compared to us dumping all of this in the landfill, right? Other steps that we have is that we try to reduce as much the plastic usage. So our packaging, banyak of our packaging is really changed to disposable cardboard boxes. A few things we still use plastic, but it's like single use, like biodegradable plastic. And definitely plastic straws, for about 3 years ago, plastic straw, memang we don't use at all already. Only for takeaway. And even the takeaway straws now, they are kind of paper, cellulose, pasta, all sorts of straws you have now. So plastic straws is quite, I think, a common thing for many cafes, especially in Penang, we don't use. And a few steps by the local government as well, that recently there were steps not to use bottled water plastic. So if you see in Jawi Health, our bottled water is glass bottle. And the glass is returned back to the supplier to be refilled, and dia bawa balik mai kita. Well, if I want to be optimistic, Malaysian cuisine in the future, I think is very, very bright future. Because if you notice, if you travel, or for the past 20, 30 years, what you call Asian international cuisine has always been kind of like Thai food, Indian food. Now you see a bit of Vietnamese and also Indonesian food with rendang or nasi goreng in most of the coffee houses that you see. So I think Malaysian food has a lot of potential because of how well balanced our food is. We are very, we cover a lot of different ethnic groups. So Malaysian food has Malay, you know, Punjabi, Indian, Chinese, and Chinese itself has so many different styles. You know, you have Hakka, you have Cantonese, Indian also you have the same, you have more Tamil, Punjabi, Telugu, and Malays as well, regional. You have the Melayu Borneo, or the Borneo people who cook completely different food, and you cook here. So we have so much potential in our cuisine, which I think now when more and more tourists are starting to come to Malaysia, they see how good our food is. You know, because it's not so spicy like Thai food. It's not so very heavy like Indian food. You have a lot of choice. So I think Malaysian food in the future is very bright. I see it as the next international Asian food, you know, taking over Thai and Indian food one day, because of its complex flavors, and it does very, very nicely in your palate. It appeals to a wide range of people. So when you say younger chefs, as if I'm so old already. But yeah, so the younger chefs who are coming up or interested to join the scene, I think I've repeated this quite a few times to many young chefs, is I think for me, like what I'm doing, you have to understand your local cuisine first. Before you attempt to cook other people's food, French, South American, Japanese, why not you try to really, really get into depth with your own tradition? what is close to your heart. So if you're a Punjabi, maybe you want to cook some more traditional Punjabi food. If you're Chinese, maybe you can go to your auntie friends or your mother or your grandmother if she's still around and learn all the steps and all the techniques yang orang dulu-dulu masak. And because this is what is going to be valuable later on. Because this is what the foreign chefs, you know, people from overseas, they are coming into Southeast Asia to learn these things. And then Southeast Asian chefs are going overseas to learn how to do croissant and how to do other things. But I think the value is really in our local cuisine. So for local chefs, young chefs, I think understandingly, you try to master your own local cuisine first. Secondly, don't think that imported goods, or just because it's expensive or imported or from a European country, that it's better. You know, it might be good for sure, but maybe the price is not reflective of the quality. Maybe the price is reflective on the shipping of how this item actually got to your front door in the first place. Whereas you have a lot of other local mia ingredients which is very highly valued. You know, like now durian is so expensive, certain seafood from Sabah, you know, it's so expensive. So you can work on these things if you want to make your dish more special. Yeah, just try to revolve from what you see locally. Yeah, I think this is my bit of advice lah. And the other advice is, like, in any business or any craft, there is no shortcut. You cannot think that you work for a few years that you immediately want to be a restaurant owner or something. You have to kind of like put in your hours, earn the respect, and learn from people how to do things properly in the proper way. Yeah, there's no shortcut in anything. You have to learn, you have to fail, you have to try again, perfect it, keep doing it, keep pushing, and then always believe in yourself that no matter it is, like at least in food, food always has potential. You don't have to cook, right? But you can do things related to food as well. Now, when you see the broader aspect of food, you can be like me, you can cook. You can also be in the production. You can be in the supply, right? In the procurement. You can also be in the manufacturing side. Even in the agriculture side, it's also related to food. Food tech or food technology, food science is also a huge platform where you can, you know, experiment in. And these things all revolve around food, right? It's not food per se, but they are the connection with it. So, you know, you don't have to like be pressured, I'm doing culinary, I must be a chef. There's many, many options you can do. Yeah, you can even go into tourism, because tourists come to experience food. You might not be producing that food, but you can talk about it. You can share to people what you know. You can bring them to your favorite restaurants. And then, you know, even now, people that are doing food blogging, vlogging, blogging, Instagram, TikTok, all food-based. Right? And those food-based TikTokers and social media, they're getting tons and tons of followers. And that is still fresh. 30 years ago until now, food is still very, very excitable for people. In the airline magazines, when people flip through the magazines, food lah yang dia akan focus on. Same with our handphone. When we scroll, food is what is going to get our attention on. So I think, don't listen to people who say, oh, food, you know, is this, is that. If you like to do it properly. Like I said, no shortcuts. And inshallah, it will pay off one day.
There you have it, a sharing from chef from Penang, Nuril Karim. And do you know, Faye, that Nuril is actually my classmate.
Oh.
Way back in 2005.
Oh, reunion. Oh, right, you're from Penang.
Yes, he's from Penang Preschool. I'm from Penang Preschool. We used to share class. I think we had SPM together of sorts. It's great to see, you know, he's achieving all the success. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's all about Nuril. We have another guest with us.
We do. Here in the studio with us, we have Arif Burhanuddin from the Lost Food Project, CEO of the Lost Food Project. Thank you and Selamat Hari Raya, Arif.
Selamat Raya. Thank you very much for having me here.
Thanks for coming. And of course, the first thing that we want to ask is, of course, I know it's the second day of Raya, but how has Raya been for you this year specifically?
I think Raya this year has been as enjoyable as it has been, for many years. Basically, because you get together with the family,
especially after like a while without COVID.
That's correct. Yes, exactly. So people can't come together. You get together with family. You get to see friends. You get to meet friends as well. And so I think every year you I kind of look forward to Raya, and to the social interaction, shall we say.
What's some Raya traditions for you yearly?
One the first thing to do is we have lunch in the house. The whole family comes together. They kind of bring the house down anyway with all the noise and all that. then after that, visit mom, and of course I think for us we also visit the graves as well. And typically it's just family. The first day was earlier was an open house day where people can come in. But I think today we tend to spend the whole day just doing stuff with our own family as well.
Yeah, that's always the case. Right?
Only second, third, fourth day that we, if we're not too stuffed, shall we say?
talking about stuff, is there anything in particular like a special signature dish that your family always prepare every time, Raya? Is there a tradition?
Usually the rendangs and the chicken and the lodehs
and the typical Raya food.
Which I tend to finish off the lodeh. The rest of the stuff I don't touch as much. But I love the lodeh. So.
But finishing off the food here, that is the topic that we're having.
Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly why he's here, right?
Yes. We're here, of course, to talk about your role with the Lost Food Project. Maybe we can start off with how you get involved with the Lost Food Project. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, so how I got involved with the Lost Food Project, first of all, I'm a lifelong volunteer. I've been volunteering since I was in school. You know, various clubs and Red Crescent and Boy Scouts and what have you. Even an ambulance driver during the term breaks with Red Crescent. I was also the root beer bear as well for 2 years. So I volunteered for all kinds of things because I think it's something which I think I'd like to do for society. But how I got in touch with the Lost Food was in about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. I was looking at something which I could give back, something new, something exciting. And I thought maybe we can address matters of food security and that sort of thing. So then I reached out to a few NGOs and found out who exactly in Malaysia is doing this thing. Then someone mentioned to me that the Lost Food Project had just been established at the time. We're basically looking for volunteers. So then I volunteered. So I contacted them. The founder is Suzanne Mooney. Mm-hmm. She happened to be here. And I've never looked back since, or I've never been allowed to look back since. And here I am. So I've been, I'm all of like, this is, but I've been a volunteer till about 2 weeks ago. And now the CEO position is basically for me very new. This is my third week on the job.
I mean, it's very interesting when you say you're a lifelong volunteer. Any memorable stories that you could share from your time as a volunteer, especially with the Lost Food Project?
Yes, in fact, the one thing that struck me was when with the Lost Food Project, I'm also a bread rescuer, we call it.
Bread rescuer. Maybe can you elaborate?
Yeah.
Bread rescuer. Okay.
Bread rescuer.
Okay, how does it work?
And a bread rescuer rescues bread from the bakeries every night.
Oh, faham.
So basically, with unsold bread,
you want to prevent it from being
thrown
expired.
Away. Although the bread is very fresh, but because of policy, they don't sell it the next day. So then I pick it up. I and a couple of other volunteers, and we take it that night itself. And by 10 p.m. basically, we're at some university or some polytechnic or some. A B40 area, and that's why we just give it out. Because otherwise they just literally throw it away.
Yeah, yeah, it's very interesting because growing up in my family, just a bit of sharing, we hate when bread goes beyond the expiry date. It's always like, okay, Hafiz, please check. When is it expiring? Mm. You know, 25th of April, 26th of April. You got to finish it 25th of April. If not, if I have a loaf of bread. You have to think of something, whether toast it make it. But I gotta finish it. You know, I can't just throw it away. Yes. But that's with bread, and somehow it seeps into other things.
My mom thinks the expiration dates are a myth, and she says it's always called best before. Best before.
Yes, exactly. So best before date is a date when it's still kind of fresh and can be consumed. To come back to this, so the memorable scenario for me was was when I walked into the bakery the first day, and I saw it was incredible. There was this one bakery, a small bakery in where I'm staying in Shah Alam. It had, and that night I took about 100 buns, you know, about 80 buns, and about 20 chilled meals. Mm-hmm. And every night since then, I noticed that we can take away about 80 to 100 items. That's incredible, mm-hmm. because 80 to 100 items, you can feed about, 80 or maybe 50 people every night. Yeah. And if I wasn't there, it would have been thrown away. So that was kind of like a revelation for me. You know?
Sorry, but I need to ask. So are there like designated bread rescuers according to zones, or is it like, I mean, like, what, do you put your hand up? I mean, how does it work structurally?
All right, so TLIP has, if you go to the website, there's actually an option there for volunteers. So if you volunteer, with and you can choose, you know, I want to do this and this and this and this.
Okay.
So we'll then pick you up, and then we'll assign you to the different things that you want to do.
Okay.
So bread rescue is one. There's also the other ones, veggie rescue, for instance.
Uh-huh. The other same one principle, is just cleaning. Different items.
Different items. So then we also have sorting and cleaning as well.
I see.
Mm-hmm. We also need basically transporters, transport the bread in the back of your boot, basically. Mm-hmm. So if you'd like to be a bread rescuer, give me a call.
That sounds like a very interesting role to take on during the weekend.
You can take it from your nearest bakery to your nearest beneficiary.
Right.
So it's a straightforward...
Straightforward volunteering.
Straightforward volunteering.
And if you aren't there to rescue the bread, it just goes to waste, right?
Exactly.
As you said.
But,
you know, beyond bakeries, what really contributes to the prevalence of food waste, especially right now during Raya season, or even before
Ramadan bazaar?
Bazaars.
Okay, that's a very good question. Great question. And I think if you look at the reports, if you look at the latest report in the papers, Straits Times. So they say that there's an additional 75,000 tons of food wasted during Ramadan.
Yeah.
7,000 tons a month, which means about 2,000 or 3,000 a day.
Yeah.
But this is only the excess. In normal months, there's about 16,000. They could be 16,000 tons of food wasted a day. And if you multiply that in a month, there'll be 500,000 tons of food. I mean, can you imagine? You can't even imagine that. You know what it means?
Yeah.
500,000 tons.
Yeah. What's the closest equivalent?
Okay, in another report, they said that the food wastage in Malaysia can fill 16 twin towers.
16?
So we take it that
not
take
one, but 16.
16 twin towers worth of twin towers, and the stats also show that the food that we throw away, 75% of the food is actually still edible, and these are things like basically let's say. Well, according to bones and as well as fruits, fruits.
Mm-hmm.
The remnants excess, of fruits, excess of fruits. And 24% of that is basically meats and thing. Now, why if you look at that portion of it, of the, let's say wastage, the 75% could have gone into composting.
Mm.
Take example, which then can be recycled as fertilizers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of wastage in the system, and people need to be aware of what they do or what they can do to try to reduce this wastage.
Again, I'm using my anecdotal because this past Ramadan for me, I've been struggling. I mean, in terms of appetite, I've been struggling, really struggling. So I'll go to the bazaar. I don't eat with my eyes anymore. I just buy a main and a side, and then I stop. And then my wife said, "Oh, this is good because we've cut down waste. There's like literally no waste."
Mm.
So, but that's me. But how in general, how do you prevent overindulge? Because tengah lapar ni pergi bazar ni at the height of your hunger.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you tend to like nak ni lah, nak tu lah. How do you prevent that? Not just during Ramadan, but also during Raya, because Raya is like when you can.
True.
It's all about. How do you prevent?
But I think it's also other festive occasions as well. My take on this one is that this is essentially, you know, there are many ways of trying to cut down wastage during festive Ramadan, blah blah, and you can read this on the net. But my personal view on this one is that there has to be a culture change, because we by nature and by culture somehow, we have this switch that switches on during festive period like Ramadan.
Okay.
You must buy cakes. you must have them on the table. You must have this and that, and you must have six dishes on the table. When you would have had maybe three. Would have been an all. So number one is a culture change. It's a culture. We need to change the culture, and that could come from things like, I think we have to be we have to make this wastage more visible. Like 16 twin towers, this kind of analogies, and you have to make it more visible to people so that they can get more and more. We have to have a change in habit, then eventually be change in culture. That's the first thing. The second thing, of course, is that we need to then consider that festivities. Doesn't necessarily equate to celebrations, because when these two words come together in your mind, then there's celebrate. So you have to make sure that everyone's fed. Lastly, I think it's also this business also plays a part. By the way, if you take an example today or any of these break of fast, yang buka puasa, buffets by any hotels. Now this is something
I don't think I can do buffets anymore.
Okay, but the issue is that now we have to check that. I think much of the fellows who go for these open days, these buffets, could be corporate clients. And because the corporate clients, it's a very simple move, just signing a credit card. But then when you have this kind of let's say culture, behavior, habit, the outlets will then also have to cater to that. And cater to your, let's say your whims and fancies. So you like something different, like something different, blah, blah.
Buffet.
So they will then put 30 dishes when they could have done with 10. So it's a bit of a culture that has been created either personally, meaning personal behavior, as well as business behavior as well. So to break the cycle, we just need to pump in a lot of awareness, but awareness as in visibility. So you need to see it around you, whether in all kinds of media, that what you're doing today is equal to this and that. I'll give you an example. The 75,000 tons of food that's quoted as being wasted, that is this 75,000 tons is worth 214 million meals. And each meal,
million meals. Yeah. Wow!
And each one, and our measurement is 350 grams per meal.
Okay.
So we take that kind of measurement.
Moderate.
240,000.
But still a lot.
Of meals, and that's when it's 75. If you take the 500,000 tons, that is the actual figure, because 75 is just the excess. It's like mind-boggling. You can feed about 3 million people a month. And in fact, one report quotes even 12 million people. It actually quotes the amount of food Malaysians waste can feed 12 million people a day. Oh, that's crazy. Yeah? Yeah. So you must have
there's like one-third of the country.
Yeah.
But you have to be reminded and reminded.
And again
reminded,
and again, right?
And this, of course, comes down to also values as well, isn't it? It's just waste not, want not.
I feel like Bazaar Ramadan maybe should put Mubazir to Amalan Syaitan.
Exactly. And that's part of the visibility.
Basically,
it's like a cigarette pack, isn't it?
Rokok membahaya.
You need ways to get the message across.
On and on. And it also takes many parties to do it. People as well as business. So they also have to come together and act together.
Okay, well, we're talking about getting the message across. Some tips and tricks for people to start adopting to less food waste. I have to ask, first of all, have you repurposed any of your Hari Raya leftovers? And what are some of the most creative ways that you've done so?
Okay, so we ourselves, as in our house, as far as I know, over the past so many years, we've not actually had to repurpose any food, because the way we cook it was just kind of like
just nice.
Including, it's just this one single lady in the house, my wife. She cooks maybe for about 30 people or something, I just realized, because just not the family of six. There's also other family also that comes in as well. So it's all finished. Actually, it's all finished by the end of the second day. In fact, it's all finished. But to answer your question, I think there are, you're quite right. For those who do have excess, then they need not throw it away. They must not throw it away. And the way they repurpose it. One thing I found in that even we do sometimes in some days where there is an excess of let's say rice, we turn it into let's say fried rice. Mm-hmm. So white rice and other condiments. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then next day turn up as fried
something
rice.
Something else. Different menu.
Something different. And that's what. And also I think we give it away as well. Mm-hmm. If it's really excess, then we pack it up in the little thing and give it away to the, you know, the guards and workers and stuff like that. But never waste it. I think food must never be wasted. I mean, it's incredible how many people go hungry. Yeah. In Malaysia, 4.8 million adults are reported to be food insecure.
Food insecure.
They're not dying of hunger, mm-hmm. but they don't have enough. Mm. 4.8 million adults. And worldwide, worldwide is reported 820 million people worldwide go hungry every night. Mm.
Yeah.
And the food that's wasted, you know, the thing is that there's that 30% of food is wasted in the system. But that 30% can feed four times that number. So if you look at the numbers, it's incredible. But unless you mm-hmm. talk about it,
yeah.
and you must make these comparisons that mean something to you, mm-hmm. Then I think it'll work. It's a culture thing. It's a culture change.
I guess on that note, it's such a great way for us to end the episode. Thank you so much, Encik Arif, for spending your second Raya with us. And that's all the time we have for this edition of Lebaran Awani. And of course, we would like to take this opportunity to thank the one at BSC, Bangsa Shopping Centre, for being our venue sponsor. Thank you so much. Selamat Hari Raya, Mak Azrai Batin, from me, Hafiz Marzuki.
And me, Fei Kwan. Good night.
We'll see you again.